After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
It's almost time, Morgan. The NBA Finals. Celtics, Mavericks, and we have to have someone that we love to break it down. Someone who's beyond talented.
Beyond.
Director of Mind the Game podcast with LeBron and JJ Redick, part of Old Man of the Three. Mm-hmm. Huge Dallas Mavericks fan.
Huge.
Three-time Father of the Year in Oklahoma City, I think.
Incredible.
He is the one and only Jason Gallagher.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. This is my favorite show in America.
Wow.
I'm honored to be on this show.
So how are you feeling emotionally? Because we've had this like gap in between the conference finals and now the NBA finals kick off June 6th. You're a hardcore Mavericks fan. How are you feeling emotionally? Are you like ready for this to start? Are you feeling like confident? Where are your emotions at right now?
Pretty good, because the Dallas Maverick fan base, I think we all kind of accept that we're playing a little bit with house money at the moment. You know, the media, whatever, doesn't need any excuse to poo-poo all over Luka. So that will happen. I imagine even if they win, they'll be like, you know, is he really that, you know, good or something? But it feels like internally we're not the favorites in this by any means. I there's so many statistics about if Dallas wins, they will become the first or the second or the third team to do X, Y, or Z as a fifth seed, as this or that. They've already beaten 350-win teams. Like, it's all gravy, which as a gambler, literally when you're playing with house money, there's nothing better. So it feels amazing.
I want to explore this Luka thought.
I knew you did.
For a second.
Yes.
Because you feel like people like shit on him?
I think that he's reached the stage in his career, and it's not that dissimilar from Jason Tatum, where when you succeed really early, people are just sort of become tired of you. And he's reached the stage in his career where the negativity is sort of flowing in at a rate that you're kind of like, why is this? Now, granted, since the playoffs, it's gone a lot better, but things from, do his teammates really like him? Do they want to play with him? Is a 73-point game really that good? Is, you know, like he got third in MVP when no one with half a brain would ever pick Shea over Luka ever. No GM in the world would do that. So it's sort of in a season that he had. So Dallas Mavericks fans have been salty all season long. I am patient zero is in terms of just defending Luka to the masses. But so I think it's been really weird. Some of the articles, does Luka impact winning really? Stuff like that. And you're just kind of like, okay, well, I had to watch Luka in December with no Kyrie, starting lineups that were like Jaden Hardy, Dante Exum, Dwight Powell. And you're just kind of like, What do you want? What do you want? He got the fifth seed. It could have been, would have been the second in the East. Like, the man had a good season. He, if he existed in the Eastern Conference, he would have been the MVP.
Jason, these are all the angles, though, that, like, every single angle you brought up, because, I mean, I shit on Luka for a while in the beginning of his career. I think there was, like, some jealousy going on a little bit there.
Yes, we're trying to protect ourselves. Right?
She's not that good. A little bit of that.
I respect it, yeah.
But I was also always triggered by his ability to always find a way to bitch at something. And because I followed the Sacramento Kings, who had DeMarcus Cousins, and I remember just always being like, oh man, it triggers me. Like, can a team really win with that type of personality? Blah, blah. He has evolved and matured more than ever. He has taken such a huge leap in his game. And that's why all those angles being this year is just surprising to me, because now I praise his game. I praise his game on the floor. I praise his maturity. I praise so much about him as a teammate. It's shocking to me that that is truly the narrative surrounding Luka Doncic this season.
Well, the complaining stuff, like, it's been baby steps. As you all know, you watch your team very closely. I've watched every Mavericks game this season and every single Luka game, probably missed two or three. But his improvement on the complaining has been marginal, but it has happened. And it's like, he used to stop. He used to just stop mid-play.
Yes.
Not get back at all. At least this season, he started to wait till dead balls, which, again, if you're a Mavericks fan, you're like, thank God. And then as the playoffs have sort of gone, he has improved. The worst game – oh, those are my dogs.
You're good.
The worst game I saw was Oklahoma City-Dallas. I want to say it was game four. And that was the game that Shea really went off in the fourth quarter. I was at that game, and it was one of the – worst Luka complaining games I've ever seen. It was to the point where I was like, when you have me being like, knock it off, I was at a low point. And then I went to game five and he didn't at all. Like, all he did was smile and shake his head, but he never looked at a ref. He never did any of that. And I think he's at his best. And that was like one of his better games in the playoffs. So I get the complaints about Luka, but like the winning argument, the teammates thing, that stuff's just so fabricated, because he's very good. Let's just be real. He's very good.
Yeah. And I think one thing that just following you on social media, and I started to pick up on it too, is like, oh, like the Mavericks kind of stayed afloat during some really tough times this year where guys were banged up, Kyrie in and out of the lineup. And once they got healthy, like when Kyrie came back, what was that, like late January, I think it was, like they started to get it going. Then the trade happens.
Yeah.
I felt like that was often overlooked around the league. Like, hey, they were hanging in there in the West, despite the fact that Kyrie wasn't out there. They were kind of limited. Luka kept them afloat.
No, he certainly did. And I understand the argument that, well, we can't penalize other, you know, MVP candidates because of this or whatever, whatever. But I still think it's something to consider. Like, when you blame a team record for why a player is not as good as another player, but then you don't consider the nuances of the team record, the way that you consider the nuances of individual play, the way you consider, you know, estimated box, whatever. It's like, well, they're all estimates. Like, a lot of advanced stats are estimates. So if we're estimating, let's estimate that the team, if it was healthy, what would it look like? You know, and I think that's the part where Mavs fans were very like, the MVP thing really got under people's skins, because it is an all-time season. Like, it just objectively is an all-time season. But, you know, the Dallas Mavericks are in the NBA Finals. Not a lot to complain about anymore. We'd much rather be in this position than win an MVP.
So if I would have told you at the beginning of the season, like, hey, NBA Finals, it's going to be Celtics-Mavs, what would you have said?
No one would have said yes. Okay. Because look, literally think about this time last year. If I said it's going to be Derek Jones Jr., it's going to be Dante Exum, it's going to be rookie Derek Lively, even some of the guys that they traded for that were sort of, whenever, you know, we traded for PJ Washington, a very smart basketball person was like, this guy's not a winning player. Gafford, it's like, even with the trade, you would have been like, really? But that to me just speaks again to how good Luka has been and is, and how it's really remarkable how you can kind of put certain people around him and he does well. I mean, taking two different rosters to the conference finals is just remarkable. So anyways, it's been fun. It's been, this group in particular has been fun. I've really enjoyed the edge of Gafford and PJ, because I feel like that helps Luka get up a little bit too. I don't think there was as much as that with some prior teams, the sort of like shit talking edge that he loved. So it's been great. It's been super fun.
He's been first team all shit talk this year. It's really fun to watch her in the playoffs. You know, I remember the Kings Mavericks games, those two games in Sacramento. I felt like so big. I was like, oh, if the Kings can win these two, like what could it mean for them? And then it was just immense pain. Malik Monk goes down. But I remember doing podcasts after those games, and I went, Morgan, I think the Mavs can make a deep run here. They just look like, with how Luka and Kyrie are playing, the pieces around them, like this could be like a real run coming. When did you think like, hey, we might have a chance here to make a deep run? Or did you get to a point where like, I think we can win it all?
Yeah. Well, so there was a couple games, but that sort of those Sacramento games towards the end of the season, they were huge because of what was at stake. There were stakes. And to win on the road, you know, knowing what both teams are sort of fighting for, that spoke to something that I thought, you know, took a lot of positivity out of it. And then, honestly, they played Oklahoma City. I can't remember the date, but it was in Dallas. And pretty much everyone was at full strength, and Dallas just beat the mess out of them. And I was like, oh, this is a better team than I think we could give them credit for. But they're doing things that are really sort of unexpected. We do the series called Islands in the League, and it feels like everything that JJ has ever like sort of preached about, which is like in-season trades aren't that impactful historically. You have to have continuity is the ultimate X factor in the modern NBA. It's sort of like this team really came together like that, like in the context of other NBA teams, like they came together within like 14 months, basically. And to be able to sort of like figure it out on the fly has been remarkable. And so, you know, I took positive things out of it, but I did always have in the back of my brain, like, wow, if we play a team that's been together for as long as they have, like Oklahoma City, or, you know, it would be tough. But I mean, they have a rhythm that is just like unbelievable. And honestly, my favorite player is Derek Lively. I just friggin' love him. And his decision making sort of out of the short roll has been literally like the difference maker in some ways, because Luka is so overly blitzed that he has to throw it in there. And for a rookie to make those kinds of confidence passes, it's been huge. And so,
I mean, his spirit, his energy, his, you know, everything that his resiliency, like everything with that young guy. And I mean, I heard him in some interview, and the way it was like with some local Dallas station, and then he like broke the fourth wall, looked at the camera and was like, you can do anything, you know, you put your mind to, just like, it was so inspirational and deep because of everything he's gone through. And he's like seen so much success, but then on the basketball court, you're exactly right to see his game grow and evolve. And I think obviously being able to add someone like Gafford, you know, to intertwine, whether it's just within the rotations, if they're both on, whatever, but you're exactly right in that short role for him to make a smart decision to be like, okay, I'm not just going to face up and go to the basket. I'm going to make sure to stay in triple threat, understand that I have different situations going on. I can make a pass. I can get back. Like, you can swing the ball around, make a quick move. And the way that the Mavs forced so many defenses to shift left to right as soon as Luka would get the blitz or anything, it was like those quick decisions by everyone. I just don't see enough teams in the NBA have enough of those pieces on the floor to always make those correct decisions.
And also, I feel like you can make the case he's been their third best player. You know, I know PJ's had amazing games, but we talk about like his decision making there, his defense. And I feel like early in the season, you know, he's a rookie, he's getting in foul trouble a ton, he's picking up three quick fouls. Dude, his defense is unbelievable, especially at the rim, and his ability to come out and switch too. It's crazy to see how impactful. And I remember early, I think it was during training camp, Kid was talking about starting him. And I remember going, they're going to start a rookie center? Like, what? I don't know about this. But his growth this year has been tremendous.
Oh, yeah. And to go from like starting center Dwight Powell to, no shots at Dwight, man. He got us, you know, he really battled through some tough times. I wish he knew how to catch a basketball. Oh. But that podcast for a different time. But Lively, Gafford, Maxey, all sort of being options for Dallas is just, it's a really fun thing. It gives me a lot of optimism against Boston because that's going to be a really tricky series. And I think options are going to be important. I don't know how Dallas is going to play it, but this is the, you know, look, they've all been healthy for basically one playoff game. And that playoff game was game five against the Wolves and they beat the pants out of them. So I just feel like having the options because I don't think Boston's going to blitz Luka very much, even though it's the most I found out through Mind the Game this week. Check it out tomorrow.
Okay.
That blitzing Luka is the most effective defensive move against the Dallas Mavericks. Granted, that's like picking poison, but it is. And Boston is like one of the least likely to blitz teams. So it'll be really interesting to see how, you know, who forces who to make the change first. But I like that Dallas has options for when they are forced to make a change.
Yeah. And before we start going into that matchup too, really quick, because we just talked about Derek Lively taking a step, maturing throughout this entire season, Luka as well, and everything that went down at the trade deadline, then for everyone to just mesh together and evolve and complement one another defensively as well. Kyrie Irving seems like someone that has actually had a really positive impact on this team. It wasn't something I expected. The amount of jokes I made as soon as he was traded last year was, how long will he be on this roster? Oh, you know, like I did my whole like thing. But seeing his ability to lead, I feel like has been a huge thing. Is it Jason Kidd? Is it Kyrie? Like, where's that leadership to really make it all work and complement one another to get to this level?
Yeah. Fair warning. This is going to be a long-winded answer. So first off, I was with you, Morgan. And now that I'm not on a Dallas podcast, I was very vocally not for the Kyrie trade. While it made sense because of, you know, the Jalen Brunson situation that they had to take some swings, they had to take some risks, I like understood why. I was skeptical it was going to work out. I was skeptical he was going to resign. I thought he was just going to go straight to LA, you know, direct flight straight to, you know, Terminal 5 or whatever it is, that crappy one. But I was convinced that it wasn't going to work. And I think that this is the part where, you know, all the skeptics of Jason Kidd and Nico Harrison I was dead wrong about a lot of things when it came to culture building and things like that. I think they built a really solid culture. Like, you guys know half of the job of being a head coach is just having the locker room. Like that's, you know, I could get frustrated that Jason Kidd always looks like he's trying to remember his PIN number, but he has the locker room, you know, and that is a huge deal. And I think that they have built a sort of support group for their players, including Kyrie, that has just sort of been like positive, like almost people first. Like they really, really care about the individuals themselves, and like going to these Dallas playoff games and sort of seeing how just overly supportive everyone is of each other. I think it was a good environment for Kyrie to come in and sort of reshape his own, you know, image a little bit through patience. And one thing that Mark Cuban said on an interview, which I really enjoyed, which was like, I disagree with Kyrie about a lot of things. But I think he needed to know that I still respected him. And that for when you start there, then you can have a lot of conversations. And I have no idea how things went in Brooklyn or whatever. I know that he on the court was really tough. And I think that a lot of the skeptics were warranted in their skepticism because of his on the court situations. But I think just knowing that, hey, you know, we need to, you are a respected human for what it is that you do on a basketball court, and we are going to continue to respect you and blah, blah, blah. I think that he felt supported and then was more open to sort of changing, you know, his own habits. And so I am never been more happy to be wrong about something in a situation working out. He and Luca gelling, I mean, if nobody saw that coming, like in terms of their personalities, in terms of the on court, and for that to work out, I am thrilled. And the last thing I would say is that he has been the heart and soul of that locker room, like hands down. Talk to anybody. It's part of why I think this whole thing is working.
Wow.
And that was my biggest thing with losing Jalen Brunson, was that there was a hierarchy in place that had been established from Luka's draft that I was like, you lose that, you lose everything. If Luka's out of whack in the hierarchy whole thing, like how do you even keep him in check? And how you keep him in check is you bring in a veteran that Luka has been respecting since he was a teenager, and he becomes the heart and soul of the locker room. And I just, again, I'm so happy to be wrong about it. That's my long-winded answer.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think one of the more impressive things about him too, I mean, obviously we know how gifted he is offensively. We've seen it throughout the years, but dude, defensively in the playoffs, I'm like, he has stepped it up in a big way. Like he's taken that challenge.
Yeah. No, I mean, he and Luka both have sort of been, you know, and all you can really ask is, hey, be a serviceable one-on-one defender, please. Luka's like not a great help defender, not great in transition, but one-on-one in the half court, he's not terrible, and neither is Kyrie. And that's been awesome to watch. And it's been really fun, like I said, kind of going to these games and getting to watch, okay, how do they make the decision whose turn is who? And how quickly that decision gets made. It's always off the inbounds. They basically just point to one another. They're like, okay. And credit to their teammates, because their teammates really can, like, they pick up on, oh, this is Kyrie's, you know, possession, basically. And yep. and it's been fascinating to watch the two of them gel. It's so unlikely. It's unbelievable.
You know, and I think all, like, both of them, even Luka, you see those stretches where his defense, he picks it up differently. He feels everyone else's energy. And I think it's like we said, like he's feeling the vibe from everyone else. And seeing a little bit more of that perimeter defense from this Dallas team, I think has really helped even the second line of defense when things come to them and then they're like, okay, I just have to protect the rim. Like they already had to work so hard. They might've gone in here, but now I have to do my job in here. Now, when we look at this final series and yeah. you think about someone like Porzingis stretching the floor, this Dallas defense, how many times have we talked about this, not only at the end of the regular season, but then this entire postseason, everyone taking a leap, it's meshing, it's working together. I feel like this is going to be a lot different look for them because there's so many weapons. It's going to be a healthy team. And what are you going to do when KP is stretching the floor?
Yeah, I think what makes this series really fascinating is that neither team has seen a team like each other. You know, usually it's like, oh, well, the conference finals, that was really the test. But like this one is like, no, the finals is the test for each of them. And Boston has the very obvious easy path or whatever. But the reality is every team Dallas has played, they have sort of always had a weak link like on the floor. And that meant that one of the bigs could guard that player and roam. You know, Dallas did that, sticking Lively on, you know, Josh Giddey, allowing Lively to kind of roam a little. And same thing with Minnesota and having Rudy Gobert on the floor. Mm-hmm. Boston's not going to have a weak link on the floor, like period, end of story. So I am fascinated how Dallas is going to defend that, because that is going to be like a team that they have not seen. Like you said, on the flip side, Boston has not played a team like Dallas, and it's like, who's going to get shell shocked first? I am really, really excited about this series because of that. From like, take away the Mavs fan in me, like as a basketball fan, it is going to be fascinating to watch two teams that have not seen competition like each other on the offensive end. So how they do that. And that's, I really like Dallas's optionality in that. I don't know how, you know, something that my good friend LeBron James said on a podcast was he was like, this is the kind of series that they're not going to figure it out until like game two, basically. Mm. And I think that it's going to have to be a feeler out. Oh, okay. we can kind of cheat off of this, but like, I don't know. I don't know how Dallas is going to do it. It's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of pressure on Derek Lively.
Yeah, and the Porzingis element's interesting because we know how dynamic Boston is when he plays. He also hasn't played since April.
Like, that's what,
April 29th, right? Like, this is not like you just go, oh, well, he's back, and he's going to be back to Porzingis again. How healthy is he? You know, like, is he in game shape? Obviously, he hasn't played a game. So, I don't know. I feel like that's going to be kind of the swing in this is like, what is he able to do on both ends too? Because you know they're going to try to attack him defensively, right? They're going to have to try.
And you know, this is why this is my favorite show in America, is that you guys acknowledge the X's and O's, but you also acknowledge the you know, the more spiritual elements of basketball. And it's like, you know what I know? There's two things. One is that Luka feels like he knows KP. And he's going to, and when that always like, it's so funny. It's like when two players play each other and they know each other, there is something about that motivates them to be like, no, I know what he's going to do when he gets the ball here and blah, blah, blah. Now that could work. That could blow up in their face. I have no idea, but there's just so many elements to this series that is so fascinating. And it is KP. It centers around that because you're right. He has not played in a long time. Match that with he hasn't played in a long time and Boston hasn't played a team like this. Like, when I was watching the Pacers-Celtics series, I was like, this is not even close to – like, Boston has not played a team close to Dallas.
No.
Like, period, end of story. They haven't. And so I am just fascinated. And the final thing is that I am – as a Mavericks fan, I am very happy that they're playing on the road first because they're a good road team. But I think Boston's going to be really brutal to Kyrie. And as I said, he is the heart and soul of that locker room. And Luka doesn't need a lot of motivation to get going. But I think everybody's going to come out like gangbusters.
Yeah.
Having Kyrie's back. I actually believe, Barstool already released a shirt in which a cane is like on Kyrie's head. Have you seen that?
No.
God, yeah. It's like Kyrie's head is like been decapitated and it's on the bottom of the,
so it's
like insane. And I really do think that like shit like that has probably already been shown around the locker room and they are going to, I really do think that this is like one of the weird times where I'm like, I'm glad they're going to Boston first. Ooh. They're going to get pissed off and they're going to play.
Yeah. And you know, Luka will be doing, Luka's going to be jaw jacking at the crowd and try to take some of that heat off Kyrie too.
Yeah.
It's going to rule.
But here's the thing. Like, I want to see Luka do it when they're up, you know, and not like allow it to get him out of his game, because obviously he's playing his best when he's shooting shit out of the basketball and then jaw and, you know, Celtics call timeout, whatever. But something that Deuce and I were talking a lot about watching the Celtics in the postseason, it always felt like they play with their food. Like they get cute with things. They can just attack, go, get up by 20, get up by 12, whatever it is, you know, go on these runs and just look like a dominant team, the way that they can push the ball in transition, everyone runs the floor, all the things. And then they slow it back down. And I'm curious if you ever noticed that with the Boston Celtics, and two, if you think Dallas could do a good job of just capitalizing on their lulls and when they do slow it down a little bit.
Yeah, Boston has a tendency to definitely play to their competition. It's one of the very small growth things that I've really enjoyed from Dallas all season long, is that the teams they should beat, they beat the crap out of. And that to me, in prior years, they were a play to the competition kind of team. That's what I meant by watching some of those Pacers series or games where it was like, man, if you do that against Dallas, like it's really tough to get out of that. So, I'm obviously going for Dallas and I'm obviously picking Dallas. And a lot of that just has to do with the fact that I'm hoping that Boston is shell-shocked. That is my hope, is that they're going to walk into a series and be like, oh, this is a different animal. I don't know how they're going to defend Luka other than just playing him straight up. Like, and I think that I don't know. They have good wing defender. Obviously, Drew Holiday is amazing, but Luka kind of eats Drew Holiday. Like historically, he's a great defender, and then he gets out on the court and he's much bigger than him. Like Drew Holiday's like girthy, but he's not Lu Dort. Like he's not as big. And those big defenders are the ones that really get under Luka's skin. So I don't know how this thing is going to go. But again, my hope is that they're just shell shocked. They're just whoa.
Yeah. And I was thinking too, because you know, Luka will. You could see a little Luka Kyrie two man action and Derek White. I love Derek White. I can't guard Luka. He's not big enough either. You know, he's just so it is going to be fascinating to see the chess match there. And I just watching Luka in the playoffs, it's like you could throw whatever look at him. At some point, he figures it out and he can make any pass on the floor. He's comfortable with any shot. It's crazy. Like him and Kyrie, it's just disgusting how many times I see them attacking drop coverage and they could go ahead and hit a floater or a mid-range shot or whatever, but they'll like leave. They'll jump in the air and then lob it to Lively and Gafford. It's like, what are you supposed to do in these situations where they're in the air and making a decision on the fly? Or the skill level of those two, it's a challenge.
It's pretty remarkable. And like Dallas is, they love to let PJ and Gafford in favorable matchups, like challenge their defenders. And I think you're going to see a lot of that too, because I don't think they're going to blitz as much as we've seen other teams do Luka. And so it's going to require a lot of one-on-one. And PJ, when he's up against a weaker defender, when he's up against a Josh Giddey or whatever, he will attack. And he has had a lot of success there. And same with Gafford. Like Gafford, if you get him in the paint, he can kind of eat. And I don't know who on Boston will defend that super well. Like I maybe KP, but they're going to put him in action and it's going to be really, really interesting. I'm so ready.
If your day sounds like
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward, Modelo. The mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's your biggest fear going into the series? What's your biggest, the thing that scares you most?
Wow. What a question.
Deep.
I think defensively, it is definitely defensively. They cannot leave a defender, or sorry, they can't leave a Celtic player open. They can't, in a similar vein, play with their food a little bit defensively and hope, like, take these same risks that have been very effective for Dallas. Like, the risks that they've taken have been awesome. They cannot do that. They have to be way more disciplined in their defense. And so I think for both teams, and again, this is what, to me, makes this series so fascinating, is both teams how will they stop each other? And for Dallas, I don't know the easy answer. Like, I really don't, if KP is healthy. So that's probably my biggest fear is just, you know, they haven't, they also haven't played a team that has like two dominant ISO players before. They have not played that team yet. Jalen Williams was not that for Oklahoma City. So what did they do in those cases? How will they defend this team? That is my biggest fear.
I also think about Luka with like a slow closeout on a Derek White or something, you know, where it's just like we've seen it before, him even on better shooters where he's just like slow to it, or he's like pointing to his teammate. He's like, wait, go get up there. Switch now. That's so late into this play. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I just think about how quickly the Celtics shoot the basketball, how quickly they can get that spray three. They see an open three, they take it. And I think if they are feeling good and feeling it and all those shots are dropping, that's where it makes me more nervous about Dallas's defense. But I think if they stay locked in, I mean, when we've seen this Dallas defense locked in and then grabbing those rebounds, going the other way, it feels like it can be really dominant. The way that they have so many big bodies to be able to collapse in the paint and really defend the paint well, where I think of Dallas and their ability to score, Kyrie in the mid-range, like, that alone is magical. Like, he needs to be looking for his in the mid-range, and he needs to be looking early.
Yeah, I genuinely think it's going to be like a face-off, like two people just staring at each other being like, who's going to blink first? Mm. That to me is what this series is. And I think both teams are going to try to play this sort of like maybe switching, but mostly sort of one-on-one going over screens, blah, blah, blah. And it'll be very interesting to see who reacts first.
So last year was our first year experiencing a team that we love in the playoffs for, I guess, since we were kids. Right.
Yeah.
And it was Kings versus Golden State Warriors. It was awful. The way I felt after every single game, even after a win. Oh, yeah. It was like I wanted to throw up, win or lose. Like, I just wasn't well. For you, you've seen this throughout your time being a Mavs fan. Does it ever get any easier?
No. And, it's funny because people have come over to watch the game with me, and I always put the disclaimer, like, I literally need in writing, like, you are not allowed to judge me for the next 2.5 hours, 3 hours, like, period, end of story. I might say something that's not great. I might, you know, whatever. I might just not be myself. And we're just going to have to live with that. But it's great, you know, because that feeling is just, okay, not to get all weird, but you know, when I was writing and I was doing more at the Ringer and stuff like that, I felt like I was in some ways like meant to be a little bit above sports fandom and meant to be sort of like a more objective person. In some ways, I would even say a journalist, a media member, things like that. Ever since I worked with JJ, he and I have talked about fandom a lot. And, you know, I had sort of refound what fandom is to me, which is my favorite thing about sports. And so to be able to sort of like comfortably fall back into it has been like really, really fun, which is why like I want to feel all these things. Like, I love to feel all of these things. It is, I think that that's why I've been so much more vocal this year on Twitter, just being a shit eating fan. But like, that is what I love. And I feel like in working in the game more has made me respect opponents more. It's made me respect, and so you're not going to catch me talking much shit about our opponents unless you're Chris Finch complaining all the time. but you're not going to find me doing that. It's more just like, I love this team. I love these players. I'm very loud about it. I'm very hurt when they lose. That is like, there's nothing like that. It's like you get to be a kid again. And I would encourage anyone to lean into your fandom and lean into all of it. Stay up all night when the win is awesome and you're just like, and piss and moan when it sucks. Like, this is what it's all about. So
I relate to this
so much
because back in our early sports radio days, I felt like the we got to be objective about this. Like, even though we're in Sacramento talking about the Kings,
be a fan.
Yeah. So we're trying to be and leaning into it is so, I know that might surprise you that like at once we try to be objective, but now we're like fog machines, fucking fireworks. What else can we add to this shit? What else can we add?
This is my office. These are not like props. This is my office. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so cute.
These things are out of moments. Like anytime I need anything, it's right here. Yeah.
Anytime I need this beanie.
It's there's nothing like it. The happiness I felt when the Kings beat the Warriors in the play-in, nothing like it. And then the pain of going to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And seeing them lose, it hurt so bad. And also I was in my head, I almost reached out to you like, hey man, I'm going to be in Oklahoma City if they win. I'm like, I'm not going to say anything about it because I don't want to mess with any energy or anything.
I told him not to hit you. I said, no, you're going to jinx it if you hit him up. Don't hit him up.
But anyway, it's just that there's nothing like it. And I think leaning into it's cool. I'm still beyond critical of the team.
That is a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's
ought to be critical of the team. It is all a part of it. And I mean, at games, I am like a legitimate psychopath. I have this like aisle seat and I stand a lot. And it is just like the most, oh my God, the joy in watching a game that way versus like sitting down and trying to be like, wow, really, you know, really impressed by, you know, whatever Josh Giddey's la la la. It's like, no, like screw Josh Giddey, screw all of them. Yep. This is my team and I'm going for my team. And, you know, this is way more fun. There's nothing like it. Yeah. Everybody should lean into their fandom. KOC, if you're watching,
son of a bitch.
Yeah, you.
Everybody knows
bitch.
You're a Boston fan. Stop it.
The amount of times I wanted
lean in, my friend.
The amount of times I wanted to fight KOC this year his little shots at Sabonis.
I'm not a Boston fan, Jason. Jason, I'm not a Boston fan. Yes, you are. Stop it.
He says he gave it up. He gave it up, man.
Yeah, you can't give that shit up. That's the other thing. It's like, nice try. Like, you're in it. Sometimes it's just like in your blood and you're in it for life. Now, what you can do, and this has been my favorite thing since leaning into our fandom, I would say the last like couple years, 4 years, whatever, like really leaning in, was to really make sure that we were respecting the game by talking about the league the right way. And that was like talking about opponents. It was never, I think some Kings fans would get mad when we'd be like, oh man, like the Pelicans, like breaking down their game and everything that they just did great and really exposing the flaws of the Kings or whatever. And they'd be like, it's just excuses. It's like, no, you're just respecting the talent around this league and that's on that team.
During the Oklahoma City series, I would tweet compliments at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Mavs fans would be like, you traitor. And it's like, what? Like the guy is unbelievable and you have to be able to do that. I have a very similar approach, but it for me, it is just leaning into your team and there's no more. And it's like, it's communal. It's awesome. And like, you know, like agreed. There's not, unless you're like a part of a church, which shout out, but if you're not, then like what other community do you have? And this community is like really, really fun. And of Mavs fans and the friends that I've made and even in the last, like in this playoff series alone, I've met so many awesome people and talked with them and it's just been great. And I sit in front of this dad and his son and they're crazy and it's so good. It's like,
Jason, one other thing really quick too. I think, honestly, Mavs fans have been some of the best fans that I've interacted with. And I never thought in a million years that I would say that.
They're happy their team's winning.
It doesn't matter. They've been so kind to us. And like, I mean, there's been kind to other fans, but there's like a few fan bases out that they're just like,
I can tell you what it is. There's Mavs fans that checked us out during that two game series between the Kings and Mavs. And I think they were anticipating maybe, some shots or whatever. And we were giving their team love and sense. And they're like, hey man, I wish you guys were covering the Mavs full time. Like, can you be Mavs
That's
fans?
That's not the only no. reason why I like them. My point is I've noticed like the way that they've even talked about basketball and the way that they're in love with the game, their city, their sport. So I get what you're saying as a Mavs fan.
Mavs fans are very interesting because, I mean, each fan base has an interesting identity. But for Dallas, it's like, it's to this day, it's still like, if you're a basketball fan in Dallas, like a real one, like you're part of this like indie group in your mind, because you're not a Cowboys, you know, person or whatever. And that's how I describe it, is that you feel like you're in a club in Dallas because you're not, you know, a football fan first, or even a baseball fan first, you're a basketball fan first. And so there's a great knowledge of the game within Dallas. I mean, there's obviously weirdos, and we know,
every fan
always,
yeah, all the time. But yeah, it's really funny. You know, I brought a friend to game four, who's a Thunder fan. He actually is a guy. He's a guy who, designed all the Thunder t-shirts or whatever. And he's one of my really good friends. He's a big Thunder fan. So I brought him to the game and we got upgraded to like on the court seats, which is amazing. But that was the game that Shea came back and he was losing his mind. He was, let's go Dort. Yeah. You know? And like all the Mavs fans loved him. And like, so I don't know. Every fan base is weird, but Dallas has done okay. And you're right. They are winning.
Yeah. Everyone's happy right now.
So you obviously predicting the Mavs are going to win. Do you have like a game? Is it in six? Is it in seven? What's your vibe?
Yeah, no. I every night I pray to the God Dirk Nowitzki, and just based on 2011, I'm going to say Mavs in six.
Okay,
that's when we usually get things done, and then we're headed to Club Live in Miami again, just stepping on their turf. Rubbing it in. that's what I'm going for, but I it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be a hard series.
Dude, just enjoy it. Enjoy the journey.
I'm like you though, Deuce. I'm very superstitious. Like I don't ever wear Mavs apparel during a game, no matter what. It's just a very weird thing about me. And then they've also sort of been like, you know, maybe we're going to do a hallelujah in the championship parade and blah, blah, blah. And maybe they've started saying stuff like that. And I'm like, and they're like, would you write another verse? And it's like, nope, not until, and I can't even. And it's the fact that you guys are even putting that out in the universe, it's like,
and I'm not going to put this out there, but like, you are a mad genius and could create a verse in like 2 seconds. So like, you'll get it done if it needs to get done, but let's not even put that out there. Sorry.
No, I agree. I didn't even appreciate the question. I don't like those kinds of thoughts.
I know you've accomplished a lot in your career. I do have to ask about this latest project with LeBron and JJ. What's it like what's it like working with LeBron James? Like, holy shit. Like, I know you've done a lot of cool stuff and you're just showing pictures and just living this, even doing, working with JJ is awesome. But like, this is, we're talking about a different level here. Yep. What's that been like for you?
Well, first off, I do appreciate at the beginning of the show that you introduced me as the LeBron thing first, because I've been recently correcting people and they're like, this is JJ Redick's producer. I'm like, no. I'm LeBron James. Okay, let's get that right. It has been really cool. It has been very surreal. I would say it's surreal. Because I have been told by multiple people that he is off the court just like a big kid. He loves to laugh. And I am like somebody who loves to make jokes. So we get along pretty well. He's been great. Like, this sounds really stupid. But like the first time he like saw me and said like, Jason, I was like, oh, wow. Like, yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
That's not stupid.
So, yeah. As a fan of the game, as somebody who's been watching him for so long, as someone who's cheered against him, as somebody who's doing all that stuff, it's really surreal. I don't know what other way to put it. He's brilliant. So brilliant. That, you know, just sort of being around him, you kind of get why he is as great as he is. He's like, the personality is just out of this world. Even, you know, when the cameras are off, he is the loudest voice, the biggest voice. He is an amazing storyteller. He is smart as hell. Like, all of that stuff was just, it was just like, it was like validate. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, he's one of the greats. And it's not just because of his build. It's because of his obsession with the game. And sort of being able to put my imprint on it in some ways, you know, the challenge for me was not to make a LeBron James so popular, because I think anyone could do that. It's how do you make it good?
Yeah.
And so I've been really proud of the product we've been putting out, and it's like been one of the more gratifying things I've done. And I do not take it for granted at all, because it is one of the coolest things. Even when we're doing it on Zoom, I'll take a picture of the laptop. Like, I am that. I think it's just awesome. I just, my kid like tells his friends, like, it's also living in Oklahoma City. A lot of people don't know who JJ Redick is, but they know who LeBron is. And sure. So finally the parent friends in my life have respect for what I do for a living. So that's nice. So it's great. It's super fun.
I'm so happy. There's so many layers to this of why I'm so happy. I mean, like, you're a basketball junkie. You're such a good person. And the fact that you get to like really take this all in. And I remember when the first episode had come out, I didn't know what to expect. And then we tuned in and I was like, oh, this was made for me. Like, I just felt like it was just you all did such a great job of talking about the game and breaking it down on a different level. But I felt like I was having a glass of wine with all of you and talking about it too, even though I wasn't there. And I just think that is sometimes like the goal, like you want to do with the podcast, you know, make it conversational, blah, blah, blah. But to make it conversational, but then to have two basketball minds, like also make it comfortable is just, it's a brilliant idea that's being executed.
Yeah. Making it palatable was the challenge in a lot of ways, because you hear it and you can kind of roll your eyes at it a little bit. And I'm sure some people still do, but it's like how you make it palatable, how you make it, you know, and there's some elements to it where it's like, I love listening to podcasts where I don't understand what's going on. Like, sometimes it makes me feel smarter just to be like, totally. And even though you kind of don't follow, I'll listen to like, whatever, the daily, and I'll be like, yeah, totally, I get geopolitical things, but you really don't. And that's kind of how it feels sometimes with this, is that you just go like, it's really interesting to know how nuanced the game of basketball is, because, you know, it's something that when we discussed in creating it, like, football just does a really good job of branding itself as a strategic sport.
Yes.
And basketball, a lot of times, I mean, and it's the free flowing nature of it. You don't realize just how no one's calling plays. Like, like no one's stopping, looking at their sheet, saying it, radioing something in. It is as strategic as any other sport. And so to be able to sort of just provide an outlet for that, for people that are curious about that, that's been really, really gratifying and super fun. And within that, it's like, you're going to get your awesome like sound bites, and you're like, it was always going to work in my mind. It was just sort of like staying true to the strategy of the sport. And so we have an episode, you know, dropping the morning of Wednesday of this week.
June 5th.
And thank you. And it's a finals preview, and I loved listening to their very nuanced get ready to listen to a lot of horns to twist action conversation.
You know what though I love about the podcast though is, one, I think it was so needed for the league, because like you said, there's not a lot of that even on the game broadcast, and I think that's kind of the next evolution for broadcast, is to try to implement some of that stuff during a game that's so free flowing, right? Where it's, you know, during a football game, you can stop because they're huddling and you can go over replays and dissect it. You don't have as much time during an NBA broadcast. But I think sometimes when you hear like a horn set, sometimes it's just set on a broadcast, and there are people at home going, what's that? I don't even know what hell that means. And so now to have somewhere where two people with an immense level of credibility not only break it down, but you know, you're putting the definitions on the screen. How many times I've hit pause on an episode, like, okay, what's this? It's fun. I like learning, and I just soak it up. And I feel like it makes basketball fans smarter. And I think basketball fans want to know more.
Yes.
Look, LeBron and JJ aren't the only people that have created YouTube content breaking down plays, but it is different when you've got one of the greats of all time doing it, right? So I just think it's been so needed for the league, and I'm sure the NBA loves it too.
Yeah, I the first time I had to go into the edit bay with this show was like so overwhelming. I was like, in the progress I've made as a basketball person, like now I hear certain things and I'm like, oh, I don't have to Google that. But the first time I was like, they really leaned into the basketball plays. So I was like, damn. And I had to like figure it out, just kind of like what is that? You know? Mm-hmm. There was one other, JJ kept saying top locking, and I thought it was top blocking my whole life. And whenever I got into the edit on that one, I was Googling top blocking and I couldn't find it. And I was like, did you make this up? What is this? And then, you know, it led to him sort of making fun of me that it's top blocking. But it is basically what I'm saying is by season two, I'll be ready to coach any NBA team.
Also, how exciting is it, though, when like, OK, you learn the definition, because I feel this way when I learn something new, and then you're watching a game and you see that, you're like, oh, shit, I recognized it.
Yep.
I learned
it's
something.
The Leonardo DiCaprio meme. It's like, I know I've seen that. That happened in the Oklahoma City series because LeBron pointed out that every time they shoot a free throw, the opposing team shoots a free throw, they run the exact same play for Chet. And so the Dallas was shooting a free throw. I was sitting with a friend, and I was like, I think they're going to set a flare for Chet. And they did the exact thing to a T.
Yes.
And I looked like a genius. Yeah. I looked like a genius.
It's definitely, it feels like everyone can connect on that level, even to the point where we were playing some pickup games with our Do Some podcast community. We literally were like, let's run a horn set.
And we were killing it.
Oh my God. And it, like the screens were set perfectly on, you know, on our point guard, like the way that he would come off of it. I mean,
I'm running DHOs like Sabonis.
Cause it's Kingspan. So everyone kind of knew too, like again, because basketball, like just anyone that loves this sport, they're becoming smarter and they're like, yeah, I know what a horn set is. We're like, let's run that shit.
You guys tell me, like, it makes me more excited to watch the series, like the finals, like after listening and editing this episode, it made me be like, oh, so they do run this horns twist action a lot. Mm-hmm. How will Dallas defend that? Like, literally, that is something that I'm excited to watch, as opposed to who does this series mean more for Luka or Tatum? While there should be a place in
yes.
the stratosphere like that, because that is entertainment and casual fans deserve to be served as well. It's nice to get a different option is all. And that's what I have loved about this podcast, is it's made me more excited to watch basketball games.
I love that. I can't wait for the finals. Yeah. Jason, seriously, thanks so much for joining us and good luck to your squad.
Good luck.
I mean, yeah, it's always a tough time. We get this question a lot from fans, is like, as a Kings fan, how do you process the whole Luka dynamic?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like there are moments I'm like, no, I'm good. It's over. It happened. But it's always going to live with you a little bit. And I guess I compare it to when, you know, the Blazers passed up on Michael Jordan. You know, it's like someone won six championships. It's tough. But I also have gotten to the point where I just enjoy watching him play.
Just respect the game.
Yeah.
That would be very difficult. And it led to the greatest line that I've ever put to paper that people still to this day like will yell at me. I went to a Bleachers concert on Sunday and someone screamed Hallelujah at me from like the parking lot. But that baffling Kings line is like the easiest line I've ever had to write. I don't know why. I was just like, that is an easy line. And I feel for Kings fans. That sucks. I have no words. I have no words other than, hey, you weren't alone in that. That's all I can say is that two other fan bases, one arguably made it just as, you know, Phoenix and Atlanta, like that's tough.
So. Yeah. Never forget, everybody.
Never forget. Ironically enough, I think this hat is from that draft there.
Seriously?
I should probably get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's
Wow.
Do you remember that those draft hats from, is that 2018? I think.
Yeah, I remember. I remember. Yeah. That was a tough one. And I bought a cigar that night just in case teams were we're going to pass up on Luka. I did not think it was going to happen, but they did.
Do you know who the Mavs would have taken if they didn't get Luka?
Probably Mo Bamba.
Really?
I think so. Oh, I think God. that was the subtle button.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I
I don't want to, like, there's no reason to shit on him. No, it's just more like, whoa. Yeah.
A generational talent, that's all. I've been
on the Bill Simmons podcast one time in my entire life, and it was before that draft. And he was like, what would you have happened? And I was like, I would take, if Luka for some reason is still there, you take Luka. And if not, then you find a way to get Trae Young. And that is the best look I've ever had.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Not bad. Because yeah. other people, he was trying to make, he's like, you know, Mo Bamba, you know? And I'm like, no.
I love your Simmons. Yeah, I was hoping you're going to do that.
It's just everyone's Simmons impersonation is Cousin Sal's impersonation. It's my impersonation of Cousin Sal's impersonation of Bill Simmons.
That's great.
Yeah. So,
Jason, you're the best. We appreciate all right, you. The one and only Jason Gallagher.
Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Podcast that you know, Deuce and Mo.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo. The mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.